You're listening to the 31st episode of the Arman and Akhil Show, bringing you interviews with local activists, politicians, and policy experts from Vancouver and the Lower Mainland. I'm Akhil Krishnan.
And I'm Arman Rana. It's the 9th of August at 5.08 p.m. We are broadcasting live from UBC's Vancouver campus, located on the ancestral, traditional, and unceded territories of the Hankamina-speaking Musqueam people. So, Akhil, back after 2 weeks. This is like the shortest gap between episodes, so people will be feeling fulfilled in their quota of their our voices. So what are we going to be bringing them? What's happened with you in 2 weeks?
So much. Everything and nothing. All that could be and really nothing that could be.
I think he's describing his beard, because for
listeners who can't see the studio right now,
he's shaved his beard. He used to have a very fabulous, very majestic, beard, but now he looks like a recent college graduate.
I think there are some listeners, maybe one in particular, who might take exception to your fabulous comment. She didn't think so, but. I nonetheless appreciate it. Nothing much has happened. Just been I did go to a bachelor party.
Yeah.
Last weekend, and I've discovered that golf isn't as bad as I thought. It's actually a pretty sweet sport. I understand why people play it. Yeah.
You also left early from a potluck.
I did leave
because
early.
Of this aforementioned bachelor party.
I didn't think you would get a hold that against me and or still remember it.
Yeah.
I got a wonderful send-off, though. I remember as I was stepping out of the door, someone from the back saw that I was leaving and went, "See ya, goodbye," and kind of like did a half step in while I said, "Goodbye, everybody, have a good night."
Yeah. It was very, very dramatic.
We did have the potluck, which was fantastic, by the way. There were some huge fans of the show at the potluck, which is really nice to see.
We were discussing making it a requirement for entry. And then a requirement for departure.
Exactly.
But we didn't have the lock set up on my condo
to
ensure that just like we could trap people in and require them to like our show on Spotify before they could leave.
Exactly.
So that's just for next time
that
we need to know to do that, to set up ahead of time.
Either we go the technology route or we go with the age-old route of hire a dude to stand by the door to look menacing.
we can get Karan to do that.
But he does look menacing though.
Yeah,
he can wear a mask. He's too nice.
Yeah, he can wear a mask.
He's a nice guy.
He'll do it for us, though.
He'll do it.
He went to his bachelor party. He'll do it for us. Okay.
So, what have you been up to in the last 2 weeks? I don't want to jump ahead, seeming like I'm just full of myself with this veneer.
Last 2 weeks work has been kind of chaotic, but maybe not. Let's not get into that. But today, I was supposed to go to a festival with a friend, the African Descent Festival in English Bay. It's been around for 10 years.
What is the African Descent Festival?
Yeah, it's just a celebration of, folks of African descent, their culture, their music. There are a lot of vendors there. Started by Yasin Karago about 10 years ago. We have a bunch of festivals, street festivals around Vancouver now.
A lot of culturally directed ones.
Like we have the Katsalana Festival. It's a good opportunity for both commercial activity and also for music. So they're always a lot of fun. But unfortunately, I came there. The beach was empty. There was nobody there. Just a couple of casual. There's even less, less normal people.
There were like just fewer beachgoers than usual.
Yeah. And that was disappointing. We'll talk, I guess, about that in more length later today. Why the African Descent Festival was canceled? But just took a stroll around with my friend around Stanley Park. That's how life is going.
Life has been basically, you've shown up to places and things have been canceled because of Ken Sim's authoritarian bylaw enforcement.
Yeah. Well, he was going to cancel the show maybe, but he wasn't able to do that.
That's why we were so glad that we're located outside of the city of Vancouver
the
limits.
Boundaries. Yeah, that's true. That was the strategy from the beginning. is we comment
we,
on
we Vancouver, thought so far ahead about
we,
this.
We comment on city politics, and to ensure our freedom of expression, we put our headquarters just outside the city limits.
Exactly.
It was.
Yeah. I'm afraid of those bouncers from the private gym, dude, at City Hall.
Yeah. So maybe let's get into it. Do you want to play the clip of African descent? Why why their this is a bit of an old clip, but it explains why their permit was revoked.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Let's listen to that clip now.
Park Board says a major festival set to take place at English Bay Beach this weekend is, quote, unpermitted and unsanctioned. The African Descent Festival has been held annually since 2015, but the Park Board says organizers didn't resolve, quote, outstanding issues from previous events in time to receive a permit this year. Festival organizers are denying that and say they were shocked when they arrived at the site today and weren't allowed to start setting up ahead of the event.
They told us that you are free to continue to have a festival, however, the VPD will not be part of the festival this year because they don't have enough resources. We lost money. We lost finance. We had almost $500,000 that has gone wasted at this place because they said they don't have resources.
In a statement, the Park Board says staff made considerable efforts to support the event by offering alternative solutions, including relocating or postponing to allow for proper preparations, adding that it values cultural celebrations and is disappointed a resolution couldn't be reached. Organizers are still planning to proceed with the event despite the lack of permits.
So that was a bit dated because the event was actually canceled this morning when I showed up. There was nobody there. And soon after, the website was located with a statement from the African Descent Festival organizers. So it was a bit disappointing. If I read this article here, organizers of the African Descent Festival say they feel disappointed by Vancouver officials who hit them with hefty policing fees, charges they claim were meant to block their event. But city officials insist the festival failed to meet safety and planning requirements. The vibrant celebration of Black culture held annually since 2015 was abruptly shut down Friday morning as police moved in to disperse attendees. Barricades remain at English Bay Beach, where the festival was scheduled for August 9th to 10th. I was shocked when I arrived, said Yasin Kirag Misaga. Almost 100 police officers with heavy weapons surrounded me and park rangers all around the beach. In a statement, which I think we discussed, they were offered to relocate or postpone the event, but this was declined. Pretty interesting. What are your thoughts, Akil, on this canceling? Who is it the fault of the organizers for not having their ducks in a row or having the money? Or is it, as you mentioned earlier, Ken Sims' authoritarian, or the park board in this case.
Authority. Which was a joke, by the way. I like the spot around City Hall, so I don't want to be banned from there.
Yeah.
I
thought he was going to say, I love Ken Sim. And I was like, okay, this is a different angle for the show. Not sure we're going in that direction.
I'm going to turn heel.
But we should have different opinions. You can love Ken Sim.
Yeah, but not for the sake of having different opinions, no. What's surprising to me about this is the fact that they've run it before, right? I'll give you an example of like an event that we wanted to go to and that got canceled. So in, I think it was 2022, there was supposed to be a Formula E race that was supposed to take place in Vancouver. It was the first time ever and the first motor racing event since IndyCar left the city in the early 2000s. They build it as like a huge, with a huge like sustainability angle and how cool it's going to be. The car is going to race around Mainstream Science World. In the end, it didn't end up happening. About 6 months in, the city kind of said, these guys don't have their permits. We're not going to give them permits. They don't have their ducks in a row. They don't know what they're doing. In that case, it was clearly the organizer's fault, right? And it kind of made sense in the city's perspective. It was like, look, you guys are setting this up for the first time. You should have everything ready to go before we even go ahead and say okay to the initial permitting, let alone like the final, we'll barricade everything, give you the police and all of that. But this is surprising because this event has been held for 10 years. So the organizers presumably knew what the requirements were and what needed to be put up in terms of financing, what needed to be put up in terms of policing. What I'm curious to know is if the policing fees, et cetera, have changed recently after the Lapu-Lapu Day tragedy.
Yeah.
If, because the Vancouver Police Department are, and I read an article just today that the Vancouver Police Department are deploying more resources to these events, setting up these barricades that protect against speeding vehicles, yeah, et cetera. So I'm curious to hear what it was. I don't know whose fault it is.
Yeah, so he said the society faced unexpected policing security bills about $45,000 for the 2023 and 2024 English Bay Festivals. Charges, he says, were never clearly communicated. Despite making two payments of more than $11,000, the events permit was denied. So there were, from the city's perspective, in arrears of, you know, about 45 minus 11, 34. I don't know if it's two separate payments of 11,000 or one payment, but about in excess of $20,000-$30,000. But you know, for sure, it's a lot of money.
100%.
$40,000 unexpectedly, you know, you have to cough up after the event for policing fees.
That's quite surprising, because you'd think that the municipal policing fees would be transparent, right? But this seems like a case of them not having figured out the. Yeah, I think ultimately they were in arrears, and the city said, "We're not going to issue a new permit unless you clear this."
Well, that's that. So we didn't reach a conclusion if Ken Sim is a authoritarian denying freedom of expression in the city of Vancouver, or if he is upholding the rule of law.
Or in the informal arbitration hearing that we just heard about whether they should call for the money or not, we're leaving it kind of up in the air.
Yeah. This is ambiguity.
Yeah. If you're listening to this, please do give us a rating on Spotify, and also send us a note about whether you think they should have paid the remainder, or you know, if the city should have waived it.
Yeah. So what's right. Next?
What do we have next?
So you know, much less important than.
But still to do with money.
Yeah. Than me not being able to go to a festival. Right. The rest of the news is just going to be of lower importance. That's why we covered that first.
Of course.
Our Prime Minister Carney, as part of their new budget, has put aside $2 billion.
With a B.
Yeah. Billion. Not million. Million doesn't have a B.
Big numbers.
It's for defense, for giving the troops a raise. Do you want to start off by,
let's play the clip first, yeah, and then we'll take it from there.
At an airbase in Trenton, Ontario, the Prime Minister unveiling a big incentive package to address a big staffing crisis that's been going on for years.
As the demands on our Canadian Armed Forces have increased, their resources and their salaries have not kept pace.
The Canadian Armed Forces is short almost 13,000 personnel. To try and recruit and retain more members, Prime Minister Mark Carney's boosting pay based on rank. The most junior members will benefit the most with a 20% raise.
Canada's not seen something like this this millennium. It hasn't seen it since the late 1990s. So it's a generational shift.
Today's announcement will help in some ways, but we have a lot of work to do in other areas.
One of those areas, getting people into specific trades like maritime technicians. They're needed to get ships to sea, and there aren't enough of them.
Our biggest challenge is the knowledge that the Canadian Armed Forces offer a wide variety of careers.
The military says about 40% of its occupations are facing a critical shortage in staff. Now those who enroll, train, and serve in those positions could receive up to $50,000 in bonuses. There is also now more pay if military members serve for more than 5 years, have to move, work in the Arctic, or on domestic operations like fighting wildfires.
It is significant, but we need to recognize that in the circumstances of natural disasters, service members do face danger and the possibility of death.
But there is criticism. The opposition says the pay raise should have been 20% for all members.
This may help to some degree, but they still have to address the morale issue. They still have not made any announcements about military housing.
The new measures will cost $2 billion a year.
part of an additional $9 billion Carney already announced to boost defense spending so Canada meets its NATO commitment this year. Ashley Burke, CBC News, CFB Trenton.
So thoughts, Akil?
Well, if it's going to help us meet our NATO commitment, that's goes a long way. It gives that means the president down south will have to find another reason for why Canada is not compliant.
Yeah, he's got a half a dozen of those.
But this is great. This is fantastic. This has been something that's obviously been an issue for a long time now. Recruitment into the armed forces because the pay wasn't attractive enough. It's been a huge point of contention. It goes a long way. And I think one of the things that was very promising about this was if we went on the Canadian Forces subreddit, the responses to this were quite promising.
Yeah. Like there's some memes being shared of Mark Carney as a character from the movie The Gladiator, where he says, I forgot the main character's name, but he says, "Are you not entertained?" Instead, it's, "Are you not retained?" And it's got Mark Carney's face there. There's another one with a character. They're planning to buy. They're calling Mark Carney Daddy Carney, and talking about how they're going to use the money to buy vehicles. So, at least the subset of Canadian forces who are on Reddit are feeling very retained.
I don't know what the membership of this.
Yeah, thank you, Daddy Carney. They have a meme saying "Thank you, Daddy Carney." It's about 80,000 membership.
Subreddit. Oh yeah, that's definitely more than current full time.
Yeah, so definitely
armed force strength.
Yeah, but I think.
But some of these under the post that actually discusses this, you know, a lot of service members have basically said, you know,
you don't think memes are enough to see their reaction? Go ahead.
Do I sound like a boomer when I said that? You just don't get memes, bro. Armand's new critique of my style. No, but like some people have said, right, that the 13% plus annual bonus is much better than I expected. You know, I'm trying to make sense of it. I'm currently in my sixth posting. That does this mean that my next posting I'll be receiving an extra 27,000? So yeah, instead of the bonus, you could just get a flat 27,000 instead. So a lot of people seem to be quite happy with this. Of course, the opposition, I think, has some valid criticism. You know, given that the system is adversarial, they're going to always find some flaw, right? They're always going to say that we can do something better. But yeah, I mean, there wasn't military housing in there. There wasn't a few other things that the opposition probably wanted to see in there, but this is great. This goes a long way.
Yeah. And I think...
Sorry, just one other thing. In terms of like the size of this like issue of recruiting, it is so bad that about like 6 years ago, the Canadian Armed Forces started allowing permanent residents to start getting into the military, which is something most countries do not do.
Yeah.
You have to be a citizen, right? You have to have pledged your allegiance to the country. They were willing to let permanent residents do it because they had such a critical shortage of people in the military.
Yeah. And the other way to look at it is also economically. Like, we don't know what the full budget is going to look like. But, you know, these people are talking about using this extra money to go out in the economy, buy cars, do this and that. So it's actually quite, you know, in some ways Keynesian in nature. You know, these service members are not the most highest paid members of society today, as we know. So when you're going to give them a pay raise, a lot of that money is going to flow back into the economy. He is looking at making cuts in other areas of the government. So this is kind of rebalancing the federal government, you know, more into defense and maybe less into some other things. He isn't cutting healthcare and transfers to provinces. So we'll see what he actually does cut. You know, via rail is something that I'm very concerned about. Which might be on the chopping block. It's really on its, you know, it's on its last legs and not surviving right now. Yeah. And so any cut to it will be brutal. So we'll have to see what the complete picture looks like. So that, you know, that was another angle of criticism is, you know, what is going to be cut? Or is this just going to be, you know, some sort of stimulative payments and not as punitive cuts in other areas? Or are we going to find some miracle efficiencies with his, you know, super genius economic brain being applied to the Canadian economy. We'll have to wait and see. Definitely.
From your support of some of these moves, sounds like you might be making a Daddy Carney meme in the near future.
Yeah, I don't know about that. I have a father. I don't need. I don't have any.
You don't need a 24 Sussex Drive supplement. Yeah.
I'm not going through any crisis of looking for a new father figure at this moment.
But hey, on the economic point as well, right? A lot of these bases are not in the major city centers, yeah. So that's also great because those communities will see a lot of these dollars kind of flow back into them. Like you know, Trenton and. And Saguenay and Bagotville in Ontario and Quebec.
Yeah, we have a military base in Vancouver, right, near in Point Grey. But that's not a community that needs extra dollars spent in the neighborhood. Anything else? Any other thoughts? And yeah, of course, the other bigger reality is a geopolitical reality where it's not, you know, yes, in the short term, If we get into any sort of conflict with Russia or any of the major powers, we're not in a, you know, Canada will fall over and crumble.
Yeah.
And we're reliant on the U.S. for support. But there is a longer term picture which is what, you know, the U.S. is trying to leverage its security protection over us to kind of extract some sort of trade concessions. What is the posture where Canada doesn't need to kowtow to that, right? 10, 20 years down the line from now, where we're put in a situation where we have our independent security situation, or at least more independent than it is now. And there is some level of deterrence, you know, not complete deterrence, we're a small country, but some level of deterrence without relying on some big brother.
Absolutely. And it's interesting you made the point about the Arctic, because that's something else that's part of this package is it's a boost in pay if you're serving in the Arctic, which is going to be a huge frontier in the next 10, 20, 30 years, yeah. As the Northwest Passage, which is a fabled shipping route that goes north of Canada in the Arctic Sea, that's traditionally been icebound, so it's not been a feasible shipping route throughout the year. But if that becomes an ice-free route, which is why it's fabled, it's been talked about for years, there's going to be a lot of pressure in the United States, which claims a significant part of it because of Alaska and Russia and maybe even China as an economic power to wrest some sort of concessions on ships going through there. And Canada having some sort of military strength to rebuff that to some degree, and having a meaningful military presence that would go a long way in Canada's efforts to say that is Canadian sovereign territory.
Yeah.
All right. Hey, folks, if you're just tuning in, you are listening to the Armand and Akil Show on CITR 101.9 FM. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk about India's foreign policy and much, much more.
In my second never, I hope you never see me again.
Ebola.
Xin chào và hẹn gặp lại.
Happy birthday.
I go to National Engineering College.
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 Fridays from 2 to 3:30 p.m., it's the Beppe Crespin Presents radio show.
It's CITR's 24 hours of radio art in a snack-sized format.
Difficult music, harsh electronics, dark ambient, drone, spoken word, cut up collage, and general Crespin weirdness.
Beppe Crespin Presents, Fridays at 2 p.m. on CITR FM 101.9.
Streaming at player.citr.ca.
What a beautiful day.
Yeah.
Are you hungry? I think I'm hungry. I think we should get ourselves something nice for our beach day.
Oh, yeah?
Oh my god, I know the perfect place. Cockney King's Fish and Chips is literally just around the corner. We should go there. It is the best fish and chips in Vancouver.
Oh my god, yes, absolutely. Let's go right now.
Cockney King's Fish and Chips, Kitsilano. On Cornwall Avenue, between Cypress and Walnut. It's the best fish and chips in town. But don't take our word for it. Try it yourself. If Kitsilano isn't your neighborhood, check out Cockney King's in Burnaby or New Westminster.
Feeling lost in the lonely, meaningless cyber web? Looking to connect with other users? Then plug in to a CITR collective. Meet users who are compatible with your interests and passions. CITR's mainframe offers 9 unique collectives. News, arts, accessibility, sports, persons of color, indigenous, gender empowerment, LGBTQ2SIA+, and music affairs. CITR collectives are where you can make great radio, great friends, and avoid the abject loneliness of life in the cyber void.
Attention, attention. All artists, scene makers, writers, musicians, community organizers, activists, anarchists, proles, punks, and weirdos. Now is the time to make your voice heard at the 3rd annual Anarchist Book Fair. We want you, in all of your resistance to colonialism, we want to platform your rage against the current political climate and join hands with you in saying enough. We're looking for folks who engage in community building, mutual aid, active resistance, skill building, and knowledge sharing to table booths and propose workshops on October 9th and 10th of 2025. This is an anarchist space, which means it opposes hierarchies and seeks to amplify unheard voices and build communities of mutual aid and support. First come, first serve. 50% of tables reserved for marginalized voices. You can email sponsorship@citr.ca to state your interest and be part of Anarchist Book Fair. sponsorship@citr.ca.
Welcome back. You are listening to the Armand and Akil Show on CITR 101.9 FM. We are going to be talking about India's foreign policy. India and China have had a frosty relationship since 2020-2021, when there were skirmishes all along the border in northeast India and China's Tibet region. Since then, there have been no state visits, and they haven't really been on speaking terms.
And it goes back beyond that, from the 1962 war, where China invaded India. 60 years ago.
And then the 1967 war, where they invaded again, but India fared much better.
And took Sikkim. And prior to that, the Dalai Lama, fled Tibet as his own kind of mini city in India, where a lot of the Tibetan exiles live, in Dharamshala. So there's a long history of mistrust between India and China going back a long time. Now, there was some level of improvement up until the 2020 incident,
for sure. Let's take a listen to a piece about how that's all about to change.
And the Indian Prime Minister will undertake an official visit to China. That's going to happen later this month. He will participate in the Shanghai Cooperation Organization SCO summit, marking his first trip to the neighboring nation since the 2020 Galwan Valley clashes. The discussions with SCO member countries will be held on a range of issues, including regional security, terrorism, and trade. And there are possibilities of informal meetings with Chinese President Xi Jinping and Russian President Putin on the sidelines of the SCO summit, which will be held in China's Tianjin city. Earlier in October of last year, Prime Minister Modi and Xi Jinping, they met at the BRICS summit in Kazan. Now, in the past, Prime Minister Modi has visited China a number of times. In May 2015, the Indian Prime Minister went on a three-day visit to China and visited Xi'an or Shanxi, Beijing and Shanghai. Then in 2016, Modi visited the neighboring nation for the 9th BRICS summit. In 2018, he visited the country twice. Modi embarked on a visit to Wuhan, China for the India-China informal summit in April of 2018. Whereas in June of the same year, he attended the SCO summit in Qingdao. Modi will visit Japan, and now we're talking about 2025, later this month, he will be visiting Japan before heading to China for a two-day visit from 31st of August to the 1st of September.
So what are your thoughts on the thawing of relations? Or is this the thawing of relations?
Yeah, I think the most interesting piece is the U.S. angle, right? Generally, you know, when you talk about India, China, we would not, you know, India is a sovereign country, U.S. is a sovereign country, China is a sovereign country. It's most helpful not to discuss Indian foreign policy in terms of the U.S., you know, which is the natural inclination of people in the West to discuss everything in terms of the U.S. But in this specific case, the moves Trump has made with regard to tariffs, the kind of the backstory here is, you know, Trump went on a tariff spree around the world, tariffed India, everyone in the world, to crazy levels of tariffs. And a lot of the smaller countries, a lot of countries that are very dependent on exports to the U.S., such as Vietnam, said, yeah, well, we'll waive whatever tariffs we have, bring them down to zero on U.S. goods, and then we'll get some agreement, some lower tariffs for access for Vietnamese goods into the United States. But in the case of India, the incentives are very different. You know, India is a very large market. It's a much poorer country than the U.S., but it's structurally very similar to the U.S. in the sense that most of the economic activity in India is within its own borders. You know, trade is important to India, but it's not as important as it is to Vietnam. It's not a primarily export, you know, oriented economy. It has a domestic market that more or less matches the size of its economy. So, you know, they export to some degree to the U.S., but it's not, you know, the end of the world to them. And they are very protective for, historical reasons of their domestic economy, domestic markets, because of the history of the British East India Company, how India was colonized through a company, right? The British East India Company was not the U.S. UK government. It was a company that colonized India. So there has been a history of protectionism in India from its founding. And there's been slowly moving off the protectionist train, but, you know, at their own pace, at a pace that they perceive is in their national interest and where they can control things. And so, you know, Trump was saying, hey, Vietnam and all these other countries giving us great deals. India's not really moving the needle by a lot. They're still keeping a lot of tariffs in place. So he wanted a way to pressure them. And he said, okay, because they import oil from Russia, we're going to increase tariffs on them. And yeah, I don't know.
Which is effectively a secondary sanction, right? So you have sanction and then when you hear is related to this, but you hear a lot about Trump. That's when he talked with reference to Russia, I'd say that, oh, I'm going to sanction Russia very heavily. And experts say, well, yeah, you could sanction Russia, but right now they're not really doing very much business that they could be impacted with additional sanctions that haven't already. So what they could do is secondary sanctions.
Yeah.
Which is what this is. A secondary sanction is a sanction on a country that's doing business with Russia in not in violation of existing sanctions, but because they're doing business with this sanctioned entity.
Yeah.
There's now a tariff on India because of this. And
there's a pretext because a lot of countries, you know, the whole of Europe buys oil from and energy from Russia, right? And they're not facing sanctions. So the issue, for India's, Russia has been India's historical ally since the founding, right? In terms of a lot of India's old defense equipment comes from Russia. They set up, you know, my grandfather was trained in now Ukraine, but part of the old Soviet Union by Russians. He learned to speak Russian to help set up a steel plant in India. So, you know, historically when India had wars with Pakistan, the U.S. traditionally backed Pakistan. India was backed by Russia, right?
Until as recently as 2008, the U.S. was seen as being more on Pakistan's side than India's side, and only kind of shifted with the civil nuclear agreement in 2008. So that's a long time, all the way from 1947 to the mid to late 2000s.
You could even draw it in, you know, the invasion of Afghanistan and 9/11, when America realized that, you know, this monster they had created in terms of the Taliban with the help of Pakistan and Afghanistan was, you know, kind of out of control. And so, you know, but the Russian relationship goes much older. So to kind of demand India sever ties with Russia is really, you know, challenging India's sovereignty in a very fundamental way. You know, Canada has relations with Cuba, right? Even though the U.S., you know, sanctioned Cuba. And Canada is basically the United States, you know, minion in terms of from national security perspective. India is not. And so this is something that is very politically toxic now for Modi and became toxic. And what I understood from a political article is that there was an opportunity to remove these tariffs, or there was a hope that if, because of Modi and Trump's good personal relationship, if they got on the phone, they would... these tariffs would go away, but Modi refused the call, refused to speak to Trump on the phone. And the reason being that people believe was that he was concerned that if he was berated by Trump on the phone or in person, this would be bad for him politically. So he'd rather take the tariffs and not have a call with Trump. So this is how much the turns have tabled over the last 6 months.
As they say.
Yeah. From being the best of friends to not even taking the call. And yeah.
I love the world leadership is now experiencing middle school-esque dynamics of, I'm not getting on the phone with her because she's just like the worst.
Exactly. Like if Modi doesn't want to take your calls, Donald, like who does at this point? You know, and you know, he's your number one fan, you know, and he's not taking your calls, but, and he's going to China. And that's what brings China into it, right? Which is the whole strategy of the US was to bring India into their national security umbrella to help use India to contain China.
Yes, because India does not have any U.S. military bases.
Yeah.
Right? So the U.S. does not have any bases from which they can project power in the subcontinent.
Yeah.
They have bases in a couple of islands in the Indian Ocean, and of course in Africa and other places in Southeast Asia, but not in India. So they need India's support.
Yeah.
And India's buy-in in order to do anything militarily and kind of project power in that region. But the other thing is also that there's a few things here, right? One, it just goes to show that India cannot be bullied into – India is basically too big to be bullied into what you want
them to do. Or at least perceives itself to be too big.
Exactly, yeah. Itself to be too big to be bullied into.
And politically, it's radioactive.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So this like turn towards China is actually quite it makes sense, but it's also quite surprising for someone who's from India. And you know, like in the aftermath of, say, like military operations or actions at the border, this is like it's like an extreme option.
Yeah.
Right. So it just goes to show the magnitude of this, basically, the relationship with the U.S. right now, that they were basically saying, yeah, we'll take our chances with China. We'll like basically do whatever we have to in order to backstop the economy if we have to. Thaw relations with China and do whatever you have to on that front. Because after 2021, there was a huge boycott China movement in India.
Yeah.
Over 200 Chinese apps were banned in India.
Like TikTok was banned.
TikTok was banned. Alibaba was banned. Tencent was banned. All of these things, right, happened in the aftermath of that. And now they're basically saying, well, yeah, we'll revisit all of that. Maybe not all of it, but we'll revisit that segment, those actions, because of what's happened with the U.S.
Yeah, and for India, people have to understand that I know China and the U.S. consider each other rivals. Yeah, they're the two world powers, right? India borders China. From a national security perspective, they have the world's largest border dispute with China, and it's a hugely militarized area. For India, Pakistan at this point in time is somewhat of a failed state. It cannot meaningfully project that much power militarily. It's lost practically every war with India or basically a truce. So, you know, it's about 1/6 the population of India. Its economy is not doing great. So Pakistan is no longer the biggest regional threat. It's viewed as a, it's actually
a proxy
for China.
Absolutely.
Right? And for India, the number one long-term national, fundamentally nothing to do with personalities of Modi or Xi Jinping, just because of geography, okay, because China took over Tibet, the number one geopolitical regional threat to India is China. It's a country that's invaded them and defeated them militarily in the past, you know, some 60 years ago, and continues to pose. It's one of the largest economies in the world. It's a huge threat. Right?
And a country that to this date claims a not insignificant part of India, it claims an entire state of India as its own territory.
Yeah. So it's just imagine, you know, if it's like, you know, it's similar to the U.S. and Canada, but in some, let's say the U.S. and Canada, except the U.S. always viewed, let's say, Manitoba or even Southern Ontario, you know, as part of its territory and never stopped viewing it that way, right? And that the entire 47th parallel was hugely militarized, right? So for India to go to China for help and to kind of pivot away from the U.S. is going against what was perceived for the last decade or so, or last two decades in India, as India's long-term national security interest and direction, and U.S.'s long-term global superpower interest and direction. Like, this is, like, India is not the only piece in U.S.'s, you know, cage for China. It's got Korea, Japan, which do have U.S. military bases. But it is a key piece in U.S.'s strategy to contain China. You know, one of the big considerations in China about, you know, even stuff like invading Taiwan or taking Taiwan is the thoughts of, okay, Taiwan is fine, but how do we ensure that something doesn't happen in the front with India? Because it's a hugely vast area. Constantly, you know, we say it's a, you know, it's a disputed area. Every few years, there's some encroachment from, I'm not saying it's only from Chinese side, right? From the Indian side too, where they're like, oh, there's no Chinese people here. Let's just grab that territory. It's not a war, right? They just change the boundary, the effect of the line of control by, you know, a few 100 meters here or there.
All the time, yeah.
All the time, right? And that's why China has a huge military presence there. And it's a big consideration for them to do, when they're invading Taiwan, how do they maintain that presence there and not get into a situation where they're effectively fighting a war on two fronts? Which they
Absolutely.
Don't want, right? So it is a very pivotal to U.S.'s military strategy and military goals that they have India on side to kind of, and India, they build up India's military so that it looks like not at the level of China, but it's a sufficient annoyance to China that they can't ignore it, right? So yeah, I think this is a huge, from my perspective, a huge blunder that Trump has made. This is speaking as someone who's not thinking that super happy with the nationalist direction that India has taken over the last decade. But yeah, I do think that just if you take their stated goals as face value in terms of wanting to challenge China, wanting to contain China, wanting to take on China. And it comes back to what we were talking about earlier with, you know, if the US's goal was to challenge China, what they should have done is tariff China up the wazoo and reinforce their relations with the rest of the world.
Especially their allies, yeah.
Right. And even the people somewhat in between, like India. But they're going in a completely different direction. You know, they continue to tariff Canada, continue to tariff India up the wazoo. Like my three countries, India, South Africa, and Canada, these are countries that specifically be targeted for additional tariffs by the Trump administration. And none of these countries have any like huge beef with the US that, you know, that it's a priority for them to kind of get into issues with the US. It's quite the contrary.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So that's my monologue on.
Yeah, and it goes to show the U.S.'s this administration's complete lack of discipline in siloing issues, right? Which you have to do. Like, it's not a business. Everything is not on the table, right? Like, if you are, if you're concerned about national security, you can't also put in a economic element to that of like, yeah, like, for instance, Canada's national security contributions aren't enough, so I'll devastate you economically until you do. Yeah. That's not a good strategy, right? It just leaves a sour taste in your mouth. And in the future, the U.S. has a 9/11-like type attack. I still think that Canada will show up, but there's going to be a lot of opposition in Canada to maybe showing up to say that I don't think we should give them as many troops as we did in Afghanistan. Why would we, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, we're getting – there's still tariffs in place today, yeah. You know? It is an absolute blunder, and it goes to show that there's – this is the problem. And you elect somebody who doesn't have advisors who have this kind of like discipline of you have to silo some of these issues in order to achieve your long-term strategic goals. And you can't just think about 4 years down the line or 1 year down or 5 years down the line. You have to think 10, 20 years down the line. And it's hugely problematic for the U.S. right now. And that's kind of what India is doing now, right? With think that trying to throw relations with China is a more long-term view on economic backstopping.
I think it is really like, as you described it, it's the emergency option. It's not what the Indian government wants to do.
No.
Right? They want to do it less than Canada wants to do it, and Canada hasn't done it yet.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
We haven't taken off tariffs on the Chinese stuff.
We actually added additional ones.
Yeah, Mark Carney has not gone to China and, you know, told Xi Jinping he's a great bloke and he doesn't look like Winnie the Pooh. Right? He hasn't done that, right? Yeah. Modi's doing that, and India wants to do that less than Canada. So absolutely. The fact that India's pulled out this option, which makes perfect sense given the situation, just shows how much they feel pushed in this moment politically.
Absolutely. All right. I think we have time to discuss one more issue, and it's a big one. Canada's push to recognize Palestine. They will recognize a Palestinian state in September. Let's take a listen to Prime Minister Carney on this move.
For the reasons I cited earlier, Canada intends to recognize the state of Palestine at the 80th session of the United Nations General Assembly in September 2025. This intention is predicated on the Palestinian Authority's commitment to much-needed reforms, including commitments by the Palestinian Authority's President Abbas to fundamentally reform its governance, to hold general elections in 2026 in which Hamas can play no part, and to demilitarize the Palestinian state. Canada will increase its efforts in supporting strong democratic governance in Palestine and the contributions of its people to a more peaceful and hopeful future.
So Canada will recognize the Palestinian state at the 80th meeting of the General Assembly of the United Nations.
Yeah, yeah. And this comes as a time when, you know, there's increasing alarm about the humanitarian situation in Gaza, the amount of aid getting into Gaza.
There's a forced starvation in Gaza right now.
Yeah. And Israel's plans to occupy Gaza City. I don't know what caused the transition, but I'm starting to see mainstream voices. Carney is a centrist. Keir Starmer is a centrist. People have to kind of get their political, you know,
leanings right,
charts in order. You know, this is a guy who's like jacking up Canada's military and cutting the budget. He is not, you know, Bernie Sanders or AOC or Jeremy Corbyn.
He's not a progressive Pat who's like who's super left wing and he's basically left of the NDP. Absolutely.
Yeah. You know, he's a centrist person. And the fact that this Macron is the same. Macron is his party is a centrist party. It is not a left wing party. He is a centrist. So these are all centrist forces that have come to the conclusion. And you see this in the US as well. There's been change in tone amongst this group of people towards Israel and Palestine. It's been quite surprising to me. And what do you think accounts for that?
I think a large part of that is grassroots, a change in the grassroots impressions of what how much we should support Israel as a sovereign state doing state sanctioned things, right? Separate from the issue of anti-Semitism and Jewish people's right to not be not be genocided in the Holocaust, yeah. Which every person is like, yeah, of course, anti-Semitism is wrong. The Holocaust was an unspeakable tragedy. But for the longest time, those two things were like it was.
Very, what caused it to get uncoupled? Because people have been making the argument for decades that you described.
But I think a lot of it is like the pictures that are coming out of Gaza are changing a lot of people's minds. If you remember back to and we're running out of time now, but if you remember back to 2014 or 2015, by that point the Syrian civil war had been going on for 4 or 5 years. Yeah. Right, about 4 years, I think, at that point. There had been shootings of civilians, multiple shootings of civilians, bombings of civilian areas by Assad. People didn't really care en masse until a photo of that boy, the child dead on the beach, showed up, and it created an outcry. Yeah. So I think it is the fact that these horrifying visuals are coming out of Gaza, and it's been in the news a lot. Yeah. Right, it hasn't just gone away. Then every story seems to be worse than the previous one.
Yeah, as you said, we're running out of time, so we have to pivot.
But yeah, I think it's the visuals more than anything. A few other things to wrap up. You can find us at the Irmán and Kill on Instagram and Twitter, so check us out there. If you like the show, please leave us a review on Spotify. The music for this show is composed with the wondrous musical talents of Sarah Pratt. Every note she writes is an exuberant gift to humanity, elevating our souls to incredible heights we never knew existed. We do have some awesome shows lined up for you. Do continue to listen and subscribe. You can find all of our episodes on our podcast feeds. Please check them out. Thank you and have a good night.